Welcome back to the DefendoCast with me, Lisa Schmeiser, and my companions in defending and casting, Phil Mozelek and Tony Sindelar. Hi, guys.
Welcome to Game of Thrones.
No, that's not what we're doing at all.
Oh, I thought we were talking about dragons. Sorry.
No. Hey, spoilers.
Well,
for the episode
we're... Spoilers. We haven't talked... All right.
For the episode we're talking about right now.
Yeah, I know.
What'd I do?
I wanted to be the one to talk about the dragons. So... people who have listened to this podcast know that our typical format works like this. One of us attempts to recap the episode in 60 seconds or less. Then we spend some time breaking down things we did or didn't like about the episode, topics we are interested in discussing, and where we think this show is going. This podcast is going to be pretty fun because it's also the about the episode that is the second to last in the series run. So maybe we talk about our hopes and dreams for the final episode, too. I'm open to dreaming, if anybody else is.
Sure.
All right, so I'm the one who gets to recap this week. If any one of you wants to, time me,
I got my iPad ready to go.
All right, so just let me know when to get started, and I will.
All right, you got a lot to do in this one, so best of luck. Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
It will surprise nobody that Danny Rand acts the idiot again. He is given one simple task to do by Elektra, and that task is to use the Iron Fist to punch his way through the door so that everybody can get back to Kunlun and get what they want. Danny refuses to, and Elektra correctly discerns the best way to get him to do what she wants him to do is to tell him she doesn't think he can do it, she doesn't think he should do it, and he has another option. Danny, eager to prove her wrong, screams, "Nah!" and promptly punches his way through a wall, ending on the other side, where he's shocked to discover that punching the dragon wasn't merely a Kunlun metaphor for shameful dirty acts. It was actually, in fact, rooted in real dragons, one of which is buried under New York City. This would lead us to believe that there have, in fact, been dragons under Pompeii. Meanwhile, the other three defenders ride the subway as they break out of the police department on their way to go back to the place where Danny's being held. Their hope is to free him and or blow up the place so that the hand can't get to where it's going. And we also get many, many scenes inside the police station where all of our sidekicks, who were all missing in the prior episode, have little crises of conscience here and there, all except for Foggy, who finally understands that Matt the Vigilante is Matt the Lawyer. You can't have one without the other. He hands over Matt's super suit. And Matt's like, "Dude, thanks." They have a hug. It's very nice. I think it's like the high point of the episode for me, frankly. Anyway, the defenders take the subway. They make it to the building. There's a lot of fighting. And at the end of it again, dragon bones. That's where we are.
All right. Minute and 33 seconds, but there was a lot in there. So, yeah.
Well, I really feel like we've got to bottom out this dragon thing because I have questions. And this is where I get it. You know, I should have mentioned this in the beginning where I'm like, oh, frequent listeners will understand. The Defenders has raised a lot of questions for me about the extended MCU. In general, New York City is the site of so many Marvel properties. One of those Marvel properties happens to include Doctor Strange. As you know, and you guys, did you see the movies?
Yep. Yes.
The movie? Yeah. Right? So basically the whole Doctor Strange movie is, oh, he goes to a mystical place. He learns powers. There are sorcerers walking around. One of whom is Benjamin Bratt, who's just kind of hanging out in New York. So in all of this time, when you have Tilda Swinton swanning around your Marvel franchise, when you've learned about the nature of reality, blah, 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 like, wouldn't dragons have come up at some point? Like, wouldn't that weird sect of people be like, oh, we got to watch out for the kung fu fighters who are busy punching dragons or trying to keep a group of immortals away from dragon bones?
Like, I have an answer. The answer's easy.
Okay.
Okay.
Go for it.
The hand is super stealthy. They're ninjas for Pete's sake. They're beyond all that. I don't care if you're the Sorcerer Supreme making up gang symbols. He can't see everything.
All right, I've got an alternative headcanon to prepare. Right. And first off, I'm totally on board with Lisa. I'm just being a jerk.
Do it. Well, yeah, you have to.
Well, you know, it keeps the podcast moving. All right.
Right.
Yeah. So here's the thing.
It's all for the podcast,
In the MCU, dragons aren't magic. They're boring. They're just dinosaurs with wings. There's a couple of them still kicking around. Maybe they talk. We'll find that out later. Maybe. I don't know. I'm speculating. I have no knowledge about how dragons in the MCU work.
Oh, please have Doctor Strange talk to the dragon.
But no, here's the thing.
That would be so meta with the Lord of the Rings stuff.
Like, when Doctor Strange was studying to be Doctor Strange, in like they covered that in like the hour one orientation. by the way, mm-hmm. dragons are real. Bigfoot is also real. Loch Ness Monster? No. But like that was hour one, and so you don't you forget about that. And the idea is that the dragons are just mundane. Sure, they're exciting because there aren't very many of them, but they're not mystical. And Doctor Strange is only concerned with like, you know, dragons. They're just basically a basement nuisance in the old timey days. You know,
oh, okay.
But why so, couldn't it just be a brontosaurus?
Which is why so many of them were underground. Yeah.
Yeah, but they, you know, you get a nest of dragons in your basement mm-hmm. if you keep too much old potatoes there. You got to clear them out every year or so. So like, dragons do not represent a threat from the mystical planes. Of reality.
Apparently not. They're like they brought them down to rotten potatoes.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay.
All right. But
well,
disclaimer,
rotten potatoes make vodka. So maybe the dragons are all just horrible drunks. Maybe that's what. Maybe yeah. that's why Doctor Strange wants nothing to do with them. He's like, oh, they're just horrible drunken
also,
lizards.
I yeah,
just
as far as we
I have mystical powers too when I drink a fifth.
Yeah.
Also, Lisa.
So maybe that's oh, all of a sudden the Iron Fist makes so much more sense because Danny punches the dragon. The dragon is drunk and belligerent. He's had like way too many rotten potatoes, and he's like, I will take on any kung fu fighter. And like the monks of Kunlun have been just mystical idiots for years, and they don't realize that what they're fighting is basically just some poor drunk idiot lizard.
Maybe. Thus, drunken style.
Also, as far as we know, all the dragons are dead. So you know,
mm-hmm.
dead dragons are not a problem.
Yeah. No, it was just, it's just this whole thing. At the end of it, you see Danny and he's looking around, he's like, oh my god, dragon bones. And we're all specifically this moment of shock and awe. And I was like, really? Really? And for some reason, like, the dragons were just a moment too far for me. I don't know why I was like, of course there are dragons buried below New York. But I was like, eh.
That was a moment too far? You mean the fight between the two, like, so that he whiffs enough times that
yeah.
his glowing hand busts the door down? Wow, that was
well,
that was something
had
special.
His number. To be fair, you know, I was like, oh, she had his number, and I'm like, well, to be like, first graders have Danny Rand's number. He is not. I don't know what they taught him at Kunlun.
Not a lot. It's
no, or if he was just like the dumbest student.
Well,
if he
yeah,
somehow
I mean,
got
is,
to be
is,
the.
Is it a failure of Kunlun or is it a failure of Danny Rand? We don't know yet. We'll explore that
yet.
On Iron Fist Season 2, which is all about education reform in monk schools. So.
It'll enrage you just as much as Season 4 of The Wire.
I like Season 4.
Season 4 had me like pacing the streets. I was so angry about it. Oh, yeah. Those poor kids.
Yeah.
I loved the season. I will never watch it again because it was too heartbreaking. And, if Iron Fist Season 2 was like that, holy cow, I don't know what recappers would do.
What?
But anyway, this just, Danny's just so dumb. Like, there is literally not a single person he goes up against who can't get inside his beautiful empty head and just start mashing buttons. It is, that Jeez. Glorious golden idiot will do anything anyone winds him up to do. Like, there's literally never a time when he can fake somebody out or play a long game. Like, to him, a long game might be, like, four hands of Uno. It's unbelievable how stupid this guy is.
He needs, this is the problem, is, in, you know, he has Colleen as the sidekick. He needs to be somebody else's sidekick. Because,
yes.
you know,
like maybe Luke Cage is like, all right, this,
yeah.
I
can work with this.
Yes.
No,
I can
Cage
work
is,
with this little white guy. I can make it
or
happen.
Or maybe Luke Cage is like, all right, we let everyone think that he is my helper monkey, but in reality, I am his helper everything. You know, Danny needs help crossing the street. I mean, just, it's so dumb. I've tried to keep an open mind about it and been like, well, maybe their weakness the first season in XYZ, and there were a lot of things to like about Iron Fist and so on and so forth, but like, this entire Defenders series has been, every episode someone has been like, Danny Rand is a moron, and you're like, you have a point. You know, and this was it. He has the fight with Elektra, the living weapon.
He has spent two episodes basically tied up for 90% of the episode, so
yeah.
And knocked
and,
out.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
and he definitely has CTE. Yeah. I mean, that's a fact.
And he's seen her in action before. He should know what she's capable of. And instead, he's all blah 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 blah. And you know, I'm a key, so of course I'll be right near this door and hit it repeatedly. And you're just like, oh my god, like why, Danny?
Yeah. He needs Luke.
All right, let's
like,
go. Let's
like,
talk. Let's talk about something cool okay. in the beginning of the episode. We're
like,
focusing on the end.
How is he still a billionaire? How has he not like answered an email from a Nigerian prince and given everything away? Like this is where Danny Rand is as a human being. And it's just baffling to me.
Luke, there should have been there could have been a great teachable moment here where Luke takes him aside and says, look, Danny, sometimes the only way to win the battle is to walk away. and don't get tricked into punching magic doors. So the more you know. So, Mose, you mentioned at the beginning of the episode, which thing did you want us to yell about there?
Well, first of all, I mean, we open up, everybody's knocked out. Everybody's completely knocked out. Now, the unsung hero.
There's a scene before that, which I was kind of confused by, because they don't really wrap back to it. Do you remember that? There's a scene at the very beginning, it takes place in the past, and Stick and Electra are talking about Matt, and I don't know, I felt like this scene... Like, am I missing something? Because it didn't feel like it connected.
All right, let's talk about if you were doing this, if you had to present this, and stand to it, why put that in there? Okay, so it's Elektra going to Stick looking pretty fresh fly, with his super shades, and that she could not coerce Matt. I'm assuming this is somewhere inside of season 2 of Daredevil, that this would have occurred, and that the war is on its way, and the Chaste need to have Matt Murdock, but he won't do it, and she couldn't persuade him, and Stick's mad at her because her feelings for him, she let him off the hook.
See, the way I actually took that scene was that she protected Matt, even knowing that it was going to cost her the relationship with Stick, and that her feelings for Matt are such where she's like, I really don't care about the end of the world. This man is my sweet, innocent cinnamon roll, and I'm keeping him that way.
Their relationship is awesome. Like, I mean, I love them together.
Because, they kind of laid a little bit of a groundwork in episode 6 when, like, for whatever reason, Alexandra not knowing Matt's name really, really angered her. In a way that we haven't seen her get angry in this series before. And then you have this thing where you see that there's the rupture between her and Stick kind of starts when she decides, no, you can't have Matt. I have decided that you don't get to have Matt for whatever it is you want to do. And I saw that scene as her playing it off with, well, I couldn't persuade him as a failure on my part, but what it really was her deciding for herself, like what the terms were going to be. And Matt is an unacceptable price for her to pay. Like, okay. That was how I saw it.
I guess I was confused about why
that's her
is that,
motivation? That,
why is this scene here at the start of episode 7?
So that's her motivation.
Scene is here because we're supposed to, because they're building up to something in the final scene where you see that even though at this point she's like a nihilist and it's just about the substance and all that, maybe what we're getting is a reminder that Matt is the thing that keeps her human, and either he is going to be her greatest weakness or he's going to be the thing that the entire future hinges on, because they'll have some connection where she decides that, okay, because this is what he wants, this is what I'll go along with.
Either make or break each other.
Yeah, make or break the world at this point. I mean,
I want to keep the world at bay for a minute. I want to go a little bit smaller.
But
than that
their
for a
relationship
second.
Is their relationship is either the greatest thing that will ever happen to them or the worst thing. Possibly both at the same time.
I think we're giving that scene too much credit. Like we are reading a lot into it. Now, Tony, I'm glad you brought it up because it's literally like 2 minutes, and then we go into title sequence, and it's kind of like I understand putting it in, but. Is it the right place? Probably not.
It felt weird because I felt like it didn't connect to other stuff we see in episode 7, and I wasn't sure if it was just like, this episode's a little shorter, so we need to drop this in somewhere. And I think
They really should have put it like in an earlier episode. Yeah. They should have put it in like episode 5, I think.
Well, especially it felt weird because like, Stick is dead. And so it's like, what are you telling us in this? Like, I thought there was going to be something significant about Stick in this little flashback that you're showing us after he's died. And I guess I was perhaps confused enough that I didn't follow it as well as the two of you did. Cause I was like, what is the new information in this, in this scene? Why is this the cold open? I was lost. What's the point? Right.
But if you look at the beats that they've shown through the series with these two, cause first, like the first time he runs across and he's like, what my dead girlfriend is fighting. And then the other beat is he hides their relationship and he hides her impact on him and their relationship and his feelings about it from the team for a while. And then there is the fight where he's like, this is not you. I know you. And she slaps him around a bit and goes off. And that's when Murakami is like, oh, the black sky is not controllable. And Then she goes back to visit her gravestone. So she's obviously like, okay, what is going on here? Since this dude keeps on trying to connect with me and I can't get him out of my head, how do I rebuild my identity? So that was another beat. Then she goes and she creeps in his house and she sleeps there for a while. And then you see her get angry and kill Alexandra when Alexandra fails to properly appreciate her precious cinnamon roll Matt. And now we're also getting another callback, which indicates that her depth of feeling for Matt is such where she would honestly be happy letting the rest of the world burn so long as it means that she doesn't have to sacrifice Matt to Stick's insane vision.
Mm-hmm. It was just
like, she is fine with being the weapon, but she is not fine with Matt being used that way.
It was weird. It just, I felt like I was expecting, because it was the kind of cold open, that something would loop back to it in this episode. And I don't think it did. And also it, you know, I don't think they've used flashbacks as a device very much in the Defenders. So it really kind of stuck out to me, I guess. So, yeah. I don't know. I was thrown for it and distracted by it and confused. And I think I was looking for, like, well, where's the thing that's going to tie into this episode? And I don't think it happened. So
yeah, I don't agree that they should have had it, but I can see why, from a storytelling perspective, the writer's like, yeah, this needs to go in there because we need to remind people that even though right now she's all, I don't care about the hand, I care about the substance, and I'm in charge now, and go punch a dragon, Danny Grar. Like, they're like, don't count Matt out yet, because Matt is the key here. So that was my sense is why they did that.
So we have a bunch of keys and locks now. What I was going to say, like I was getting into is, Misty Knight is really one of my favorite characters from Luke Cage. Mm-hmm. And she does not disappoint here, in my opinion, anyway. I think, you know, because really now we're starting to deal, there's two big things in this episode that kind of personify street level heroics. Mm-hmm. And that is bringing in Misty and the NYPD. And so there's consequences for actions. Because these three are on the hook for two murders.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of interesting to me. Like, it kind of, even though, like, their quote, sidekicks and families are, you know, in the NYPD. But, like, now we're bringing in this whole other piece to the equation. And basically, Misty kind of brings out the whole, like, look, we're fighting against kind of like stuff that's like gods and supernatural. Like, shouldn't we kind of need some of these people? Which is, you know, the interesting grounding of, like, you know, kind of like the Avengers. Like, this is kind of why we need these people. Mm-hmm. The second one, I don't know if I want to bring up yet, but it involves the subway. That's all I'm going to say about that until we get there.
Oh, God, I love that scene so much.
All right, so let's just say it right now. Like, like, they can't. They literally are getting out of jail, or not out of jail, but out of the precinct. Mm-hmm. They don't have their wallets. And so how to go to the main fight that they're going to, but they have JJ's
Metro card.
Yeah, Metro card.
Or maybe she's got like a pile of them in there, because I can't really see Matt jumping a turnstile.
Yeah. Well, he would, but he would just do it kind of like parkour style. It's a little different.
No, this is true. But we did watch him parkour his way up a flight of stairs once. So.
That's right. But, which is because I think they use like promo shots from that scene were used to advertise the Defenders. Which is great, right, because it's the three of them. Danny's not there because they're on their way to Danny. And it's just such a great New York setting that sometimes the Defenders kind of phones that in terms of how much is this actually in New York. You know, like, so that was great. Is we're in New York. This is just how we travel looks, 20 blocks, you know. It's
just the looks on their faces they were going through, and the fact that Jessica then reaches over and steals a homeless man's beer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, both guys look at her like you know, I think Matt turns his head, and they're both like, really? And she's like, it has been a long week. And they're like, we can't argue that. So I just... Oh, I really loved that whole sequence. The fact that they don't have a queen jet or a billionaire.
No, exactly.
They're hiding in an alley. You know, it's
yeah. And the billionaire at their disposal is an idiot busy punching holes in dragon doors, so they can't use his resources.
Mm-hmm. They can't get an Uber, you know. So yeah.
You'd need Uber XL at that point.
So.
But those grounding moments, like, those are, like, what I really kind of...
Sure. Well, it's like...
I would have liked to have seen more of, but, like, it's those kinds of, like, it's like a breathable moment where it's like, it's a breath, man, this is cool. Yes.
We're in New York. We're like, we're the three of us are just hanging out and it's kind of ridiculous. And we're on our way to the big, we are taking the subway to the big boss fight with the ninjas. Yeah. You wish there kind of had been, like, you could have imagined there being a bunch of these kinds of scenes in the first episode. They didn't really do that. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Unfortunate. So.
Yeah. No, it was just, I loved it so much. I have to also make the guilty confession. I found the fight scenes kind of boring this time out.
Which ones in particular?
The one I found the most interesting was the Madame Gao versus Luke and Jessica fight, just because, because it's fun watching an old lady wielding her,
I like that one. That you're absolutely right. That one was more exciting.
And I loved the fake outs that they did, like Luke and Jessica working together as a team. Faking out. I thought that was great.
I also thought it was interesting because it's like there's three of them and there's three members of the hand. And I was like, oh, they're going to just split off and everyone's going to have their little one-on-one fight. But it's like, no, Matt's going up against two tough ninjas and Jessica and Luke are going up against the one toughest ninja. So but I thought that was creative and kind of fun.
You're right, because you talk about difficulty levels, and the thing is Matt and Jessica and Luke aren't really aggressive fighters. They're more like, someone's hitting at me. It's a good thing I'm strong and have tough skin.
Right, but they don't have any fighting skills necessarily.
Exactly. They don't, but they're going up against the one person who can basically flick her fingers and fling them around. Mm-hmm. Whereas Matt is like, all right, and he gets a chance to spin kick and be daredevil-y and try to beat the crap out of multiple people at once. And like you can tell, he's like, "I'm in it," and I'm sure Bakuda's like, "At last, a foe worthy of my blade," or whatever idiot thing he would say. Mind you, I love the character because he's ridiculous, but he's also super eye-rolly ridiculous. So and this is another fight where he just didn't shut up.
Mm-hmm. And I like that, it was basically shown as they're actually kind of at a standstill, and then Colleen shows up and they're like, oh, that's too many people, and they do a ninja exit, which is like, that's good, right? And it's like, okay, distraction, and we're gone.
And I really enjoy where, like, they're all, Colleen, and she's like, you could say thank you, and, good point, fair enough, so.
Well, because if I'm not mistaken, did Colleen and, someone else leave the station to help?
Colleen and Misty go there to help, and I think...
And then Misty stalls for a little bit.
Yeah, Misty is stalling the cops while Colleen runs ahead with the duffel bag full of explosives. Which I guess was just, like, in an unlocked evidence container. So you'd think that they would check explosives into somewhere, / do something with them. Take out the fuses, at least, but... I don't know, maybe something will happen, but yeah, she seems to just have a giant bag of explosives.
You mean Chekhov's explosives?
Yeah, what could go wrong? Yeah. She's got a giant bag of explosives and a map, a blueprint map showing you where to place the explosives, so, yeah.
No.
She's ready.
So, yeah, so, I mean, I liked the, I liked some of the scenes that we saw between other people, like, I always like when Colleen and Claire talk, and honestly, I feel like what we should see is Claire moving into a position where she manages the defenders, like, she's the point of contact, and she keeps their ridiculous selves in line, and...
Well, if you remember, there's them talking to each other, saying, how did we get here?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's like a verbatim quote. And it's an interesting, like, kind of touching on the human nature of what it's like to be around these kind of exceptional people.
Yeah. So there's that. I like that a lot. I really love the Foggy Matt scene. I want to talk about that a little bit because one of the things that began to irritate me a little bit about season two with Daredevil was. Both Karen and Foggy put in the, Matt, you can't be a vigilante and a lawyer. And it wasn't even because the idea of being a vigilante disgusted them. It was just sort of this, we don't want to see you hurt. And I was like, you're kind of making up a conflict here in a season where you don't need to make up any because there's already plenty. And what I really liked about this episode was that Foggy is like, you need to keep your nose clean as a lawyer. But I understand that you also need to go out there and hit ninjas. And because I am a lawyer, I'm going to help you keep your lawyerly nose clean. And because I know you and I love you, I will also give you your fly red leather suit so you can go out and hit ninjas. And it was just such a great scene. It was understated. It was well done. You get to see how smart Foggy is lawyering up and him counting on Matt to understand the subtext. And when Matt finally gets it, it's like, oh, my boy, my Foggy. Like, you can see there's that moment where after Foggy leaves and Matt's all irritated, and then he unzips his bag and he realizes it's his suit, and you see his head turn to where Foggy has been, and you see how he gets it. And that's just a really nice piece of work there from Charlie Cox. And it was a nice moment of characterization for Daredevil too, where he's like, oh my God, Foggy accepts 100% of me. And it just, it was just one tiny little moment. And yet that means a whole lot in the character development, you know?
Well, but think, they have not had the greatest of relationships. I mean, you come out of Daredevil season two, and basically they're
barely
not
talking. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not really friends anymore. I mean, it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's, this is them finding their way back to each other, which I approve of.
Fight sequences that you didn't approve of. I'm going to assume it's the Danny and Elektra one. So covered boring. In darkness that it makes it like, I mean, this is a prototypical, like, look, if our guys, the guy who's playing Danny, I don't know who his name is. I don't care. but like clearly, I mean, they've both had some sort of like, you know, stunt training, whatnot, but it's so like, I'll even go so far as to say, like, Arrow is kind of a step ahead of this particular fight sequence.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, they shroud it in so much darkness that it just, like, this is kind of this is a marquee, you know, we've kind of built the franchise on these incredible fight sequences.
Mm-hmm.
And these two just obviously don't have the, you know, the chops to do it. So let's just cloak them in darkness and we'll, you know, hit a few stones.
Yeah,
and I mainly, like, I knew where it was going, so I wasn't super invested. That's like, I know how this fight ends. He punches the wall by accident. So
yeah, and then he ends up, you know, I was reading a couple episode recaps back when this thing first came on, because I was like, wait, what? This is underneath New York City, or did he punch his way back into Kunlun, and it's so magical it's now underneath New York City? But, you know, I'm still going with, okay, they found the door. On the other side of a door is a dragon's body, and clearly, at some point, the order of the crane mother, they were going around, I guess, sealing the stuff up, or some prior Iron Fist was. But though the fight was really boring, which is tough because Elodie Young is a fun fighter to watch. Like, I really enjoyed watching her work on a bunch of other things that she did through the series, and her fighting here with Danny Rand, you're like, oh God. Ugh, I just have to suffer through this, don't I? And,
well, you know, and her calling herself Elektra.
Mm-hmm.
Did she do that at the end of the last episode?
She did, because after she stabs Elektra, after she stabs Alexandra, she says very clearly, my name is Elektra Natios, and I'm in charge now. And that was her basically rejecting the whole Black Sky thing and letting them know that, all right, this is how it's going to be.
I guess in my mind, the whole Black Sky thing was also like an identity or entity, in a sense. I mean, we're talking little, you know, crazy voodoo dragons and whatnot. I thought maybe there'd be a conflict.
Moz, have you read this? I have not read the Elektra or Daredevil story it's from, but something I read online basically told me there's a thing where Elektra gets, they call it the Beast, but basically a demon is put inside of her. And so she's
the host for something.
She's the host for a demon.
Daredevil himself resurrected her in some capacity, and it was always known that there can be issues with that.
Sure.
Very similar to
Pet
the Lazarus
Cemetery, where you never know what comes back from the Pet Cemetery.
It had a lot to do with, especially like more importantly, the Lazarus Pit, like an Arrow, where things just, you're not exactly in this plane.
Yeah, in the Batman world.
Something else comes back with you, or things you
or in the, I think the Lazarus Pits, it's pretty much in all the versions, there's the idea that it will lead to madness, and that, like, so
you lose your humanity. Yeah. So
people, it turns out people are not meant to live forever. So there is a price.
Okay, so here's a complaint that we hadn't made yet about the Hand that I feel like we should make now, is how come none of them are Stark raving lunatics?
I mean, maybe they are. They're just high functioning. So
no, well, this is the thing.
He killed a bear. What do you want, Lisa?
Like, well, that, you know, look, that's an environmental crime, but people commit those like stone cold sober all the time.
Yeah, but most people don't kill bears for sport. So most people have a job.
Yeah.
So
or most people can respect the fact that we share the planet with other species. But
yeah.
No, it's just, you would think you'd see, I guess maybe Alexandra was supposed to be mad in her way or something, but mm-hmm. it would be like, just once I want to see an immortal who's just so beyond loopy, where people are like, of course, Grandpa, yes, you've lived 2,000 years. We totally believe that you once had dinner with Henry VIII. And like, it turns out that he did, except that his memory is Swiss cheese. And so he's like a repository. He would be a repository of wisdom if you had another 1,000 years to sit down and take notes and then try to sort it all out. Like, we never see the immortal like that. They're always like weirdly in charge of their faculties and capable of long-term thinking. And
I think there's got to be a couple immortals. I think this is how they compartmentalize it. Isn't there? There's, I think in the Marvel, or I'm forgetting where I get it from, but I know there's stories about immortals, and the idea is they could live forever. Oh, it's powers. Possible spoilers for a comic from a million years ago. One of the main characters in Powers is an immortal, and the premise is that he's like literally been around since caveman times, but he can only remember basically a normal human lifespan of memories. So he remembers like the last 45 years or so, and is kind of confused because he's always been the same age. But yeah, so, and I think there is another character who remembers everything, and they are less well balanced because remembering everything has a price.
So that's interesting. So he only had like he could only kind of, it was like let's just say 90 years of memories.
I think it was more like, I think he looks like he's in his 30s, so maybe even only like 30 or 40 years of memories. But yeah,
well, this and this actually raises another question about the nature of the individual members of the hand, because again, they'll present as having wildly different ages. And they do talk about, well, these bodies do have limitations and they do wear out. And so do you transfer consciousness from one to another? Was this the whole idea behind Black Sky, where she was kind of the apotheosis of this whole process where they took all these fighting memories and skills and dumped them into a person? And so now Elektra is dealing with having all of these skills and experiences that aren't possibly native to her? Or are we seeing, or like, is the reason that Gao is so old compared to the other people in the hand that she tends to go longer between rechargings because
was she just old when they got frozen in time, basically, as it were? Right?
Did they get frozen in time? Because again, they talk about these bodies have limitations. So it's not clear to me, do you transfer personality from vessel to vessel? Or do you have some sort of substance that de-ages you, but only to the age that you were when you left Kunlun? Or I wish they would say something about that. Because
I wasn't going to go down this path, but you guys are really actually bringing up some stuff that I thought about. And I was just like, I didn't want to nerd up and be like, yeah, had that has all that
no.
work, but then I realized
welcome to Tony here. And Lisa Mose. So
yes. I know I got you, but it just in my mind I was thinking to myself, did Gao the way in which Alexandra presents is that she has changed bodies. It's just in the way she says it or something about it. It just I thought she was actually doing like some sort of like changing of bodies, but I don't think that was the case. But at the same time, I don't, you know, it's like, so I'm just going to say it. I didn't realize that, like, Kunlun was like a multicultural capital.
Well, it's magic. All right. So,
yes. All right. So I'm a monster for saying that. I know, but.
No, I mean, it is confusing, right? Because
the way you could plausibly retcon it is you could point out that since the Roman Empire was actually really multicultural, and it was because they used to take soldiers from conquered countries and then send them off to other countries with the theory that it helped them solidify the identity as a Roman first, as opposed to, oh, well, I was originally from this country that is now part of the Roman Empire. Like, no, I'm Roman, and now I'm in Gaul, and I'm miserable.
It is impressive to believe that somebody from South America is in, wherever.
I don't think Bakudo's supposed to be South American.
Oh, okay.
Maybe he's just down there because he looks plausibly South American enough. But my point is I could easily imagine where if it was a bunch of people from the Roman Empire who somehow made it over to Kunlun, there's your diversity answer right there. Oh, it happened because of the Roman Empire. Like, you know, Julius Caesar was like, go over these mountains, see what's there. They went, they saw, they stayed there, and that was it.
All right. I mean, you know, these are all plausible things. I'm just, I'm just expressing where I was at with that. I was just like,
probably giving this more thought than the people who wrote and cast this show, to be
honest. That I believe. Not in a bad way. Well, mm-hmm. yeah, kind of in a bad mm-hmm. way.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I guess you have to believe that maybe, I mean, in the days before where you could get to Kunlun more easily, mm-hmm. You know, Kunlun would be this legendary place that if you were a study of the martial arts and mystical powers, you would mm-hmm. travel far and wide to get there to study with them.
Yeah, because yeah, yeah. see, I had this other, like, total headcanon that, like, again, this sounds horrible, like that, like, you could only get to Kunlun, like, at certain timelines. Like, it was like the gate opened up, like every 100 years.
Works. That's yeah. definitely yeah. how well, it is in the comics.
Am I wrong about like, that?
In the comics,
am I making
big,
that up?
No, well, I don't know if that's established in this. In the comics, there's the idea that, like, there's several mystical cities, and, like, you can only go to them when they line up, which only happens X number of years. However, there's also...
That would actually explain why Kunlun never crosses paths with the Doctor Strange universe, come to think of it. It's because they're on completely different cycles as far as when they pop into this plane and pop back out
again. Sure. I think in the comics, because they want to be able mm-hmm. to go back and forth from Kunlun, there's also shortcuts. So, but like your main... And then there's like... there's a big arc in Iron Fist where mm-hmm. like the idea is you have these other mystical cities, and all of them line up together once every, I don't know, you know, it's like a planetary alignment kind of thing. Also, I know the planetary alignments aren't real either. But, like, they have a big tournament on the special occasion when all the other mystical cities line up with each other. Yeah. I did not realize. So,
like the mystical Olympics, really.
Yeah. It is like that, but with slightly more murder. Yeah. I checked because I was curious. So the actor that uh-huh. plays Bakudo is Puerto Rican, and I did not realize he was in The Wire a million years ago. I totally don't recognize. Well, I mean, it was a long time ago. He's Omar's partner.
Oh, the one that gets tortured and killed in the first season. Spoiler. Oh no! Well, no wonder we don't remember him. It's because he's
the guy from Transformers, right?
He is also from Transformers.
That's
much,
right.
Much more recently than The Wire. So, but yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have not seen Transformers, so I can't spoil that.
It turns out, no offense, actor, you have aged in decades since I saw you on The Wire. Yeah. So time has passed. So I did not recognize
He may be using serum in your nightly routine, but with
it, no. You know, it's still a decade. It's hard to we're all aging.
It's hard to erase with a little retin-A, no matter how hard you try. Oh. there's somebody screaming, no, it's not true. My skincare works. Sorry.
It's okay. We're learning a lot about the hand.
Yeah.
So, okay. While we're having other nerd nitpicky things.
Here we go. Might as well.
Because I'm still confused.
Yes. So I'll stop that.
Like, the whole deal, and again, I haven't seen the last episode yet. Maybe mm-hmm. all of my questions get answered. Probably not. So... Elektra was an incredibly powerful assassin ninja working mm-hmm. for the Chaste. She is being loaded up with Black Sky. And there was another Black Sky subject in Daredevil where Stick killed like a little kid who was theoretically a Black Sky experiment.
Yes.
Because he's like, he was a monster. But he wasn't human. Yeah.
But like, Elektra is already like an incredibly powerful assassin. Like, mm-hmm. how much... I don't even get what Black Sky is anymore now. Like,
no,
is it making her more
really
of an assassin or just wiping her identity?
It's like dragon dust. It, like, go with your Game of Thrones instincts. Like, you took dragons and you ground them up. And that's a finite thing on planet Earth, obviously.
But, like, mm-hmm. why does... I mean, I don't totally understand, like...
I sort of feel like I feel like the Black Sky is kind of like the glowing briefcase in Pulp Fiction.
Like, you're not supposed to ask too many questions.
Like, you're just supposed to accept other people's reactions to it and sort of fill in the blanks for you. And so one person can infer, oh, the Black Sky is the vessel of all of the accumulated fighting experience all of these cats had.
I guess it would be more impressive if you didn't already start with like an incredibly powerful assassin.
Weren't they draining blood out of the kids? For Black Sky as well.
for all kinds of things.
For all, yeah, like apparently it's like multi-purpose goo.
They just like to keep blood, most. They tell you it's for the black sky. They just like blood. It's creepy.
Well, they need it. I mean, when you get into fights, you need to get transfused. It gives you electric out of your fingertips.
I guess. Well, like the thing I don't quite understand though is Elektra. Like what we get in Daredevil season 2 is that Elektra was always meant to be a living weapon. So what I'm not clear on personally, and this is where like thousands of people chime in on Twitter to help me out. What I'm not clear on personally is if she always had the potential to be Black Sky and Stick was like, well, we can probably subvert this with some training. Or if or if Black Sky is the thing that happened to her because the body was dead and Stick didn't keep track of where her corpse went. Like there, I guess
that's the latter. She was always to be kick-ass. She was always a kick-ass fighter and assassin. Yeah. And she was like, ooh, that's a really good like vessel for us to fill.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it's unclear. I guess it's hard. I mean, again, power levels and fight scenes and how mm-hmm. you do stuff. Like, we've already seen in previous Daredevil, like, Elektra just murdering a ton of ninjas. So when she comes back and is now, like, the embodiment of a mystical living weapon, mm-hmm. we can only show that by having her kill a bunch of ninjas. And it kind of fails to show me. I guess I didn't get it because it's like, I feel like we had already seen that happen. Like, So to me, it's like, how big a deal is this? I mean, I get it's a big deal that she's alive when she was dead. Also, mm-hmm. If you know that this is a thing that's possible, insist on cremation.
Well, this is the thing. This is going to be my follow-up question, is if she was always this vessel for this kind of thing, like, why would you not instantly, like, head to your local crematorium and then have, like, Stick carry the jar around with him? Because you know he would do it. He'd love to do it. He'd be like, these are the ashes of a girl I considered my daughter. And you'd be like, oh, that's some hardcore stuff, man.
There's a great Mike Mignola comic panel where I think it's from Screw On Head Boy, where he says, like, mm-hmm. In this world where vampires and zombies are just a matter of course, like, cremation for all very important or geniuses or world leaders, it's just a matter of national security. Like, we don't mess around. So, yeah.
Exactly. Like, that's what you should do with dead ninjas. That's what you should do with any.
Yeah.
We haven't seen the death of any serious superheroes in the MCU. But I would love to see them, like, eventually organically arrive at the point where, like, yeah, this body is going into the flames right away. We do not want Hydra resurrecting it. We do not want some weird mystical cult filled with immortal ex-monks to resurrect it. We just want some security.
It's hard, though. You all the boffins at S.H.I.E.L.D. are going to be like, but we want to cut it up and use it for science. So
yeah.
That's why you need a policy in place ahead of time. So. Yeah.
You also can't go down the road and resell the comic when said villain returns mm-hmm. in, 5 to 10 years a year.
Yeah.
My biggest complaint in a majority of these, and I said it last week and I'll say it again, is I don't find Elektra to be the baddest of. First of all, I think she's awesome, like, as a character. I'm mm-hmm. not saying it in this particular sequence of events. She is awesome. I don't see her being the most villain of villainous. Like, when you lopped off Alexandra's head, like, it's hard for me to get my head around that now Elektra is the worst of the worst. Yeah. Like, I would almost like it if there was one more person that was, that sixth finger that controls it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't, and it's weird to me that the other members of the Hand are like, I guess this is happening.
Seriously, like, none of them were like, we could kill you too.
Okay.
And, like, and they're like, we can...
and we're very powerful. Like, you only got Alexandra because that was a surprise, and like, you get one Elektra, and now we're gonna take you out because you're a loose cannon.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then they're like, we can, by the way, we have been able to easily mess with everybody else's brains because, again, immortal, have nice handles on psychology mm-hmm. here. We can get Danny Rand to punch a wall in 5 minutes. Watch us. And mm-hmm. there's not even any messy fighting involved. It's just Gal going down and talking to him in a condescending voice until he gets furious and punches a wall because, again, Danny's an idiot. So,
yeah.
No, you're right. They should have killed Elektra. And the fact that they didn't, you're like, really? This is a thing you chose to do?
Mm-hmm. I hate to cut it to ribbons like that. But I feel like I'm doing a disservice if I don't, like, openly say, hey, X, Y, and Z didn't really work for me.
This doesn't pass the test. Yeah.
Yeah.
This doesn't pass the, it makes sense in the context of this, of the world that they're building test. Cause it kind of doesn't. Again, you had a bunch of people who were shown to have extraordinarily long view and, incentives that are not the same as Alexandra's. And in theory, they should be able to roll with the changes. Like, that is basically a core requirement of being immortal, is being able to be like, okay, things have changed considerably. For one, we have plumbing. And there's none of that. They're just kind of shocked that it happened. And, oh, okay, here we go. She's the boss.
We have literally been running a secret shadowy organization for, like, centuries. But, like, now we're just going to fall in line with a new leader. We're cool with this. This is how this works. So,
yeah,
I don't know. So,
What I'm going to do is, since at this point we're all just sputtering about how we would probably make better immortal people than the hand would, we've also gone over 40 minutes, and I figure it's because we had a lot of ground to cover in terms of where dragons are in the MCU, the profound psychological failings of the members of the Hand and how they could be even more profound, why you should always cremate your assassins, so on and so forth. Let's wrap this up. We didn't get around to our hopes and dreams for episode 8, but that's okay, because what we can always do is just punt our hopes and dreams to a series wrap-up episode. How's that sound later?
Well, isn't that because we are going to the finale, right?
Yep. We're going to do the finale, and then we can do one episode after that to wrap up and talk about what we hope happens in the MCU after this. How about that?
Oh, interesting.
All right, let's do it. Yeah, I know. We'll get all analytical. So I want to thank everybody for listening. It has been a blast doing these with you, too. We are looking forward to seeing what happens in the finale. I was Lisa Schmeiser, and with me were Phil Moselak and Tony Sindelar.
Have fun with that black sky.
Take care, Nancy.